Welcome to Standing in the Sunlight with Cynthia Rose. We are all on an ever-unfolding unique journey. Join Cynthia Rose as she begins her unique perspective to all that is meaningful. Topics and personalities that support your path, bringing inspiration and passion and heart-centered ways to live a more fulfilling life. A down-to-earth and uplifting sharing of what it means to be spiritual, creative, and living life to the fullest by standing in the sunlight. Born an intuitive medium, Cynthia Rose is also an ordained minister, singer, astrologer, educator, and writer. She has studied the intuitive and healing arts for over 40 years. Rise up and stand in your sunlight now with Cynthia Rose.
Hey, everyone out there in internet land. I am so excited today to bring Andrew Newman, author, to the show. Andrew followed his deep longing for connection and his passion for spiritual development in a 12-year-long study of healing. He's a graduate of the Barbara Brennan School of Healing and a qualified non-dual Kabbalistic healer. He's been actively involved in men's work through the Mankind Project since 2006. In addition to his therapy practice, Andrew has published over 1,500 donated poems as the Poem Catcher, served as a volunteer coordinator for Habitat for Humanity in South Africa, as you will hear his wonderful accent, and directed Edinburgh's Festival of Spirituality in Peace. And today we're going to talk about his beautiful books for children, Conscious Bedtime Stories for Children. Are you there, Andrew?
I'm right, yeah. So nice to be here with you, Cynthia. Thank you for the welcome.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk about these books. I have a couple of your books in my possession, and I absolutely love them. They are...
What do you love about them?
You know, I have to mention The Hug Who Got Stuck is one of the books that I have here. And I just absolutely love the way your story is telling a story, but leading the child back inside of themselves for their answers.
I'm so glad you see that. I mean, that's exactly at the heart of many of the stories involve the internal world and the external world and the relationship between the two. And I think our children can need valuable support around those, the integrating of, hey, I don't know what's going on inside me and how does this make sense?
I absolutely agree. I used to be a teacher, and I was always, that was my goal always, was how can I be there for the kids to help them own what it is they know. And I used to wish there was books like this when I was a teacher. It's difficult for adults to find their way back in with the big crazy world. And what a great world if we can raise our children with these kinds of lessons.
Yeah. You know, my path has been a lot of therapeutic work with adults and working on healing. And the way I would say it is that it takes a lot of work to turn an adult soul back towards itself, particularly when on the path of life, we learn some things that aren't quite right and aren't quite true about the nature of the world. And then, you know, we have to, the unlearning takes a whole lot of effort. And the neuroscientists will back that up and say that it's easier for us to create a neural pathway than it is to rewire one and recreate a new one. And so that's why the books exist. That's why I've applied my understanding of healing and therapeutic and psychological developmental growth to the kids, because if they don't, if they get set off on the right path right at the beginning, they have a lot less unlearning to do.
Okay, so that's your motivation in becoming a children's author, I take it.
Well, that, and it's a whole lot of fun. It really is. I mean, where else do you get to? I get to bring worlds and characters to life, and take those characters on heroic journeys that inevitably have some sort of struggle, but then through the struggle there is a victory. And in the world of healing school, we would talk about what is the healing response that a client needs, what is the experience that they need to have into their system and be a new response, so that they can change the patterns that are old and out of date. I get to weave that. You know, there's this little hug who comes out of the hug factory right in the middle of the heart. And I mean, everybody knows that that's where hugs are made, right? You knew that, of course.
Of course.
We've all got this hug factory in the middle of our heart, but that sometimes that when our hugs are leaving, that they can get stuck in the web of sticky thoughts. And these are the things that our mind's telling us, like, you know, I'm not good enough, or nobody loves me, or I'm all alone. And I get to create a world where this happens, and where a victory happens for that hug when it remembers its own true essence, and it falls back on its own true nature, and through that gets free of the sticky thoughts, and you know, the world gets beautifully soft and warm and fuzzy and glowing like a good hug.
I absolutely agree. I always have said for years we need 4 hugs to survive and 12 to thrive, and I saw this quote in your book: we need 4 hugs a day for survival, we need 8 hugs a day for maintenance, we need 12 hugs a day for growth. And I didn't know that Virginia Satir had said that. I had no idea, but I learned it somewhere along the way when I was around 18 or 19, and that's my story. So I always say to my husband, how many hugs did you give me today? And if it's like, okay, you owe me 4 more tomorrow.
No, the counter resets itself every day. I mean, when I was creating this, this is a challenge. I mean, counting the number of hugs. The back of the book has this hug meter, and you know, I dreamed that up when I was working. I was in a co-working office, and I'm working hard on books, but not feeling connected to the people in the space. And I really have a big heart for connection. It's something that I think that is so innately human, but more than that, my understanding is that all of those painful moments that we experience in life are flavored with disconnection, and that the remedy for that is connection. And so it's super important for me to pay attention on a day-by-day basis to the balance of disconnection and connection. And to go and seek contact when I realize that, hey, I haven't had my hugs today. I'm sure I can get them. I'm sure there's another human being who also wants a hug. Let me go and find them. And make for some entertaining engagements. And particularly for parents, I mean, one of the questions at the back of the book there is, does your heart feel full, or do you need another hug? And if that's the last thing you ask your little one before you go to sleep at night, you'll get a really honest answer, and the opportunity to send them to sleep feeling full in the heart. I'm like,
so
I get warm and cuddly. I'm like, yeah.
So important. Yeah. My husband doesn't get to go to sleep without giving me hugs. I know he's probably listening to this and laughing, but but it's like I used to say to my son when he was little, that he was like, how do I get to be from a little boy to a man? I said, well, there's a man in every little boy, and there's a little boy in every man, or there's a child in every adult and an adult in every child, is what I used to say to him.
Like you said.
And I never forgot that child within me, so I'm grateful, but I certainly would love these books, being that I was a different kind of child. So I certainly would have loved that, being empathic as I was. And I would say, if there's any parents or grandparents listening, you really want to get these for your kids or grandkids or a friend. They're just beautiful books. So we're talked about how you become a children's author, or how you did you you know did that just happen naturally from the work you were doing, and you know, how did you become aware of the conscious parenting movement? How did you get into this?
The writing of the book was a very natural process for me. I was enjoying journaling. My journaling typically was poetical, and one day I wrote a poem, and I thought, oh, this needs some pictures. And I already knew the person who was going to I was going to go to immediately. I thought, and I went off to Rosie and I said, hey, I've written this. Would you help me put some pictures to it? Because she was really great at doodling and drawing. And that book became a book called A Little Light. It was written in 2010. And then I didn't do very much with it. It took another couple of years before a similar poem arrived. And I thought it also needed some pictures. And that was The Fish Who Searched for Water. I used to call it the title originally was The Fish Who Nearly Drowned in His Search for Water. And very quickly thereafter, The Tree of Goodness, followed by The Bee Who Could Not Choose Her Flower. And they were very, in a way, as a photographer takes a picture of the world and then shows you the picture and says, here, look what I see. This is what my poetry was always doing, and stories in a way are like that. It's my picture of the world, and go, here's what I noticed. Have you noticed this as well? And the books got woven into a collection after I did some strategy work, after I learned about the conscious parenting movement. I was really excited to discover Oprah's favorite parenting expert. Her name is Dr. Shefali, and she had written a book called The Conscious Parent, and it was one of those books that I highlighted every page and went, that's what I'm thinking, that's what I'm saying, yes, yes, yes. And as I went through that, I got clearer also that my enthusiasm for expressing my unique healership to children and in this way was something that I really wanted to invest in. I will say that.
The illustrations are just beautiful. I mean, the eyes in the hug when it's free with the wings. I mean, that you can feel the freedom in the drawing. Beautiful.
And Alexis, I work with many different illustrators, or I have. More and more I work with Alexis Aronson. She, when I wrote the book called The Boy Who Searched for Silence, the book was pretty much a download or a channeling, but I had spent 4 days on a silent retreat, and at the end of that retreat, the story wrote itself in 5 minutes. So whilst the writing took 5 minutes, the transmission came from a much bigger body of work. And I wanted to make sure that I had an illustrator who could go to those depths within him or herself in order to convey the imagery that then matched the words and the transmission of the story. And that's where Alexis and I started working together. And she was a very competent artist, but hadn't been in the book industry before. And frankly, as you heard, neither had I. I'd been making these up as I went along. And I have a motto and an encouragement to myself and to other people, which is to let the first spark of creativity live unedited. And I say that because if we edit too quickly, we never get to the deeper, the next piece. And so Alexis's work was young in the illustrative sense, and mine was young in the writing sense and the creative stuff. But we've grown to along the way, and the artwork sometimes get more sophisticated, and sometimes we pushed back and gone for more simplicity. It's been a partnership. That she says to me, "How come every time you send me a book and I work on it, I have to go through the same journey that the character in the book goes through?" When she said that, it also just affirmed for me this is the right relationship, that she understands and she can see this. And so, in a way, I have to be careful what I write about, because it can make it hard for us to create stuff. She worked on a book called The Prayer Who Searched for God, and we did that book in record-breaking time. It was just effortless. And so much relating to the content of it. And there's another book which isn't out yet called The Circle People, and it's granular and gritty, and that's the important in the story, but I underestimated how much it would affect the creative process for her as an illustrator. So we had to slow down and work at a different pace for that.
Well, fabulous. I have somebody that I wrote music with, and I've written music with, and it's so important. He can send me, I could send him lyrics, and he could send me a piece of music that is exactly what I was thinking. Like, just syncs right up perfectly. I had a download come of lyrics that I wrote. It was supposed to be for a church service called In a Quiet Moment, and I just woke up and wrote it down, sent it off the next day at 4 o'clock, and by 5 o'clock he'd sent me music that I couldn't have written that fast. It was beautiful. We're gonna go to break here. Stay with us. We're listening to Andrew Newman, who writes conscious bedtime stories. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Andrew Newman, and we're talking about his conscious bedtime stories. I would like to pick up, you've begun to tell us a little about the books, but tell us more about the books, and you have a subscription club. Tell us about that.
Yes. Yeah. It was always part of my vision to be able to build community around parents and families who share the same values that we're aligned with, who want to make the last 20 minutes of the day something that's special, almost spiritual. It's like it can become a spiritual practice. If you've got a kid who's under 7 years old, you pretty much have to pay attention to those last 20 minutes of the day one way or another. The subscription offering that we put together, this could only grow, of course, once I had 12 stories. And we do a picture book, a coloring in sheets that match the picture book. All of the books have stickers in the back of them. And then also we want to keep those stickers, for example, in the hug book, a sticker says, "I hug from my heart." In the book, How Diablo Became Spirit, it says, "I speak with animals." That's an animal communication.
Oh, and I want to talk about that book after too, but we'll keep that. We'll talk about that book after.
we will. Good. And families are invited to a full moon live story time on Zoom that we offer. And we really don't want to inundate people with electronic media because we're all about connection, but there's an occasional email that says, here's why we wrote this book. Here's what the story's about. At different times of year, what I know that parents face as the seasons changes, as the holidays come around. Families can opt in for the whole year or try it out for a few months and see how the kids like it. And it's all on our website, consciousstories.com.
Fantastic. So,
there is something exciting about.
Go ahead.
Sorry, there's something exciting about something arriving every month at the door. I mean, I know that many of us had that as kids in some way for us, and this was always always something fun for me to go and see what the postman had delivered, and I want to keep that excitement alive in families.
I think that is really important. I wasn't one of those kids where we could afford that, but I had a friend whose parents bought her the Dr. Seuss books, and she was sort of like, "Oh, there's another book." I was like, "When's it coming?" I was over at her house reading her book as soon as I could. Her parents wouldn't let me borrow it, but I'd be over at her house and say, "Did you get a new book this month?" Yeah, I mean, that really, I was a bookworm. I loved reading, and she didn't like reading so much, but sometimes it's just the way she was with the situation she was. I think she was probably wanting more connection, because as I remember that family, there wasn't a lot of connection going on. So that she had the books, just not the connection. And I remember that, even though I was only seven, I remember that. So
right, yeah, we're even at that young age, we're very astute to the atmosphere of a home. And how it is, and how, what channels nourishment flows through and where it doesn't flow through. We might not have the language for it yet. This is the one of the reasons why each story starts with a snuggle breathing meditation, four simple breaths, starting with "I breathe for me." And that one's often for mum. Mum's tucking kids in at the end of the day. She's still got some work to do. If she chooses to come present and put the other distractions down for a moment, then the quality of connection opens up a lot more deeply. And kids share all sorts of things in those last 20 minutes of the day that are a little bit surprising. And I hear that a lot from families, and how when they're open and ready for a surprise to happen, and they say kids say the darndest stuff. And we use these four breaths: "I breathe for me," "I breathe for you," "I breathe for us," and "I breathe for all that surrounds us." And paired breathing is the fastest way to create connection, and it doesn't require connection across. It deepens the connection of eyesight. It enhances anything that we've got with if we're making touch contact. It might be massaging, or just hanging out curled up together. That this activity will create a depth of what I might call soul connection.
And I can remember when my son was young, I had to work and I was, single parent. So the last 20 minutes of the day were sitting there with him. And boy, if we'd had these books, I always tried to sort of check in with what kind of day he had and what was going on. And sometimes we would read something, but then we would go off into a whole conversation. And, those are memories that I really cherish, is the end of the day, because sometimes I would be, having long hours with the job I had. And, then you come home and there's laundry and all the other things, and dinner and all the things you have to do. And I agree, the things that would come out of his mouth at that time, the questions, what a great thing to have a book to say, oh, let's look at this book just to spark that conversation again. So.
And we only get so far with the questions of how was your day, and it gets shut down or limited in the answer with, oh, it was fine. And we need something a little bit, I always feel that the more questions I can think of, the better my conversations go.
Right.
And so just those little activity pages at the back, help parents by giving them some prompts that, in a way they can ask if they had to, because it was in the book, not because it came from them. And sometimes that gets a more generous response.
And I bet it helps parents that are on their spiritual path too, to take a moment from all their crazy things of this earth that they've had to take care of, to take a moment and tune in with themselves, not just the child.
Right. And if they don't do that, then they're not going to model to the kids how to do it. I mean, our kids are mirroring us from day one. They want to be like us, no matter who we are or how we are. And this is really the opportunity to role model, is by going, hold on, I'm just going to take these breaths, or I'm just going to answer these questions about what I'm grateful for today, and you answer them as well, and then together, you know what I'm grateful for, I know what you're grateful for, our connection grows and deepens as well.
It's goes beyond even what we're saying, kids modeling. I'm remembering that when my son was very young, I can't remember what it was, but I guess I had been saying, oh shit, because all of a sudden I heard him go, oh shit. He was like 2 years old, and I went, uh-oh, I better watch my language.
Yeah, you probably went, uh-oh, and then right there.
Yeah. And then you have to teach them not to say bad words, and then they remind you not to say bad words. So, has your books gotten out there, and you've got all kinds of books? Have your books won some awards? Have you gotten it out there and it's been promoted? And
Yes and yes. The Mum's Choice has picked up four of the titles. Those were the only four in print at the time. And the elephant who tried to tiptoe, she's obviously not being herself and needs to fall back in love with herself the way she is. The Laughing Witch, which is connecting with sacred space and honoring nature. The Hug Who Got Stuck, which we've spoken about, and The Boy Who Searched for Silence. And those four were given the Mum's Choice Gold Award. And then the whole series has been picked up by Moonbeam Awards and been recognized and honored there, which is fantastic. We sell through our website. We have them on Amazon, of course. There's a growing collection of bookstores in Unitarian churches and Agape and that kind of body of spirituality around the country, because America has just got this beautiful abundance of choice in how we practice our spirituality. Places like the Shambhala bookstore, the Shambhala meditation centers, and the mind, body, spirit stores around the country are finding people walking in every day going, hey, I've heard about this, do you have it? And it's a great pleasure for me to be able to travel and talk at conferences, go to schools, and have people come and say, oh yes, we've seen this, and so nice to meet you. And really a different stage of the business from that first phase a couple of years ago, where nobody had heard what it was I was dreaming of creating.
Well, they're just, I mean, I can't wait to have grandkids so I can read them these books. I want to be a grandma. I'm looking forward to it. No pressure to my son if he's listening, but I'm excited about, you know, being able to read these. And you were talking about, you know, out there and promoting it. I just think that these are, I can't speak highly enough about them. You've had some big speaking opportunities, like opening for Deepak Chopra and doing a TEDx talk at Findhorn. Would love to share some of that with the listeners if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, the Deepak event was absolutely fabulous. The theme was so the future of well-being. And the organizer of the event ran a competition, which I thought was very progressive of him. His name is Joshua Dawson, and he runs a project called I Am Genie. And he had actually spent many years traveling around the country granting wishes, and he's very good at drawing in resources and funneling them through to places of need. He hosts Eckhart and Marianne Williamson and Caroline Mace and Deepak Chopra. Deepak, we're on first name terms, yes. And he ran a competition, and so I won the speech competition to open for Deepak Chopra at Oregon Convention Center, and that was an amazing highlight. What a great man and how inspirational he is. And then the TEDx talk, it's not online yet. It's just finished its editorial this week, and it's titled Why the Last 20 Minutes Matter, and we're talking about a little bit more about what's happening in the brain, a little bit about the neurosurgery around things we've touched on today, like connection, healing, disconnection, and the way that trauma gets integrated into the body during sleep, and how we can change that pathway. The short of it is, if you've ever been to bed on an argument, you know that you wake up on an argument the next morning. It doesn't just disappear.
I can't actually go to sleep if I were to have an argument. I'm just too.
Right.
I just can't do it. I would just not sleep properly. What would be the point? You know?
Well, that's right. And so if we take that down to a subtler level, and we pay attention to that, then we really have an opportunity to decide what our brain's going to spend 8 hours working on when we go to sleep. For the parents, probably 6 hours. But if we can create a sense of safety, a sense of being loved, a sense of belonging, and we can have that as a full body experience in the last 20 minutes of the day, then that's what the brain will work on during the hours of sleep. And therefore, when we wake up the next morning, we get to wake up without anxiety. We wake up in the confidence that we had when we went to sleep, and so our day starts off on the right foot. I think this applies, you know, it doesn't matter how old we are. I can track this for myself as an adult, but particularly important for our little ones.
Yeah, I mean, the little ones are our future, so but we can't say enough about that. So I know
they really are.
So the TED Talk, once it's available, it'll be up on your website, consciousbedtimestories.com, when it's available, or you'll have a link to it? Or
Yes, absolutely. And the URL is consciousstories.com, and we're hoping that it goes out on the main TED platform, or certainly on TEDx. Sundhorn will host it, and I will, if people want to know about it, follow us on Facebook. That's Conscious Bedtime Stories, or drop an email onto our homepage, and we'll definitely be communicating with our community around to celebrate it. I think it's a great moment.
And have you been to any of the libraries and read there, or do they welcome something like this, or no?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a beautiful part of the grassroots aspect of this business, that I get to pop up a table in the most amazing places. And so libraries, I've done love schools. I was artist, author in residence, I think was the title they gave me at Bixby School in Boulder. Recently, I spent a full week there and had the kids writing their own stories, and the older kids doing critical thinking and book reviewing, which was immensely entertaining. Got to meet the parents, got to work with the teachers. So a beautiful immersion. Sometimes I just get an hour, and other times I get a week like that with the community. The readings are always fun. We always create a new story on the fly, which makes sparks the creative energy in the room. And then conferences, like I went to the American Association of School Librarians, and they had a great event every year.
It looks like we'll have to take our last break before we come back with Andrew Newman, Conscious Bedtime Stories. Just hold on.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Tune in to the practical, intuitive, mind, body, spirit for the real world, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone who
had to be independent and take initiative, and that's how I handle every project I get.
Discover new ways to develop great talent at gradsoflife.org. Brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
Okay, what were we talking about? It was just, we were in the middle of something. Do you remember?
I was talking about schools and libraries and Montessori teachers. Oh, the school librarians. The American Association of School Librarians have a conference every couple of years. One of the things that I found very interesting about this, because now I spend a lot of time in the, I call it the conscious education space, and so all the materials and the books and the resources and the toys and that are very well crafted and specifically focused. But when I went out into that librarian space, that wasn't the case. And in fact, it would have been very difficult for a school librarian to identify these type of resources in amongst the scale of this exhibition. And it's a mission that that I have, is to make these resources more available. Not only, you know, I'm not the only person working in the sector. There's a lot of great authors who are very skilled in mindfulness trainings and want those resources to be made available. So by the time that exhibition comes around in another 18 months time, we'll definitely have a collaborative working body that can exhibit there and you know, put some neon lights up going, hey, you know, mindfulness practices, conscious resources for your school right over here.
I love that. And I love that also you were talking about how when you got to be artist in residence, how you had them writing their own stories. I actually did a study when I was with a certain school board where we had the kids taking a different sense of responsibility for their learning. And instead of telling them what to write, part of the study was to see if they did better at writing and became more mindful if they actually wrote what they wanted. And we had phenomenal results. And so I'm a big supporter of getting kids to sort of tune into their hearts and their thoughts and say, what do I want to write that can help me?
I really like that. And Big City Schools did that. And I had worked with the kids from kindergarten through grade five. We worked almost exclusively with the book, The Boy Who Searched for Silence. And I asked kids ahead of the story what they knew about silence, whether they liked it, whether they didn't. Well, we captured all of the input from them. And parents might not agree with me, but it's definitely my experience that kids love silence. And certainly the kids in these classes did. And we had moments with 12 or 15 kids all just sitting quietly for 3 or 4 minutes in a deep, beautiful silence. And then when they got to writing their stories, the only mandate for them was that they included the word silence, that they could write about anything. So we had rocket ships, and we had aliens, and we had willow trees, and all sorts of different stories that were very personal to the child. And I think that you caught the essence of that beautifully, that really makes a difference, as opposed to telling them they have to write about something.
Yeah, I was just laughing the other day saying to my husband that you know, when Easter, you'd come back from Easter break as a kid and say, okay, now write about your Easter weekend. And how excruciating that would be if you didn't do anything, you know? So it was like, and it's boring. It's the same old one. And yeah, I learned so much. Another thing that I used to do with kids, and this is another reason why I love your books, is that this wasn't officially part of the study, but I used to, in the way that you do it with kids, was help them to ground and center before a test. And then they would, you know, tell me, I'd say, how many of you have test anxiety? So these were kids that were, you know, around 11 years old. And how many of you have anxiety before a test? So we would, you know, get them in a grounded state and say, the answers are already in your mind. It's the silence that gets you there to find them. So we'd get still. Mm. And they all would say after, can we do that next time before the test? Can we do that again? I mean, they loved it.
Right. Right. There was a little kid who was going to have to play, I think, a recorder test. And he just pointed, he says, I'm in the yellow zone. And I had to turn around and look behind me, and then there was this, you know, the yellow zone is an anxious zone, and the green zone is a settled zone, and you know, it was a colored-based reference chart that was on the wall in the classroom, and I think to teachers are so overwhelmed with a constant melee of things that to get a few moments where everybody is on the same page of centered and quiet is just like gold for them in the day as well.
Yeah, so important. Even
Cynthia,
brings
you,
that
you,
brings.
You,
go ahead.
Sorry, you sounded like you were interested in the story how Diablo became spirit. Is that one that you know the real life event?
Yes, and you knew exactly where I was going. So I was just going to ask you about that because I've seen the video and I just love that. So, yeah, tell us about that book.
Well, the story titled How Diablo Became Spirit is co-authored with Anna Breitenbach, who is a South African animal communicator. Anna is best known for a documentary called The Animal Communicator, and a little segment of that documentary got placed online and blew up and went viral over the last few years. And that is the segment around her interaction with this black leopard who was in a wildlife sanctuary in South Africa. His name was, at the time, was Diablo, and he hadn't been seen out of his night shelter in the 6 months that he had lived there. And the caretakers were concerned about his well-being and at a loss about what to do. And at that stage, Anna got invited in with a filmmaking documentary team that she was working with at the time. And they, you can watch this all on YouTube. You just Google How Diablo Became Spirit. And there's this incredible interaction with the three key characters being Jörg, who's the caretaker at the sanctuary, Anna, the animal communicator, and then the big black leopard. And in the course of that, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but in the course of that, her communication with the leopard, she was able to validate some information that made Jörg really understand that there was a communication happening and that it was possible, and that really changed his attitude deeply. And the leopard got renamed from Diablo to the name Spirit, and his nature changed as well, and he came out of his night shelter and explored the sanctuary and has been much happier ever since. So for you know, that's the setting, that's the story. Anna's a good friend of mine, has been for many years, and it was a delight to also go and meet Spirit the leopard and on a pilgrimage at some stage, especially to do that. And Alexis, again, who was the illustrator, she got to go and sit at the sanctuary with her sketch pad and just sketch him for hours.
Wow, that's
so nice. The whole story is just like family and resonant. And there's kids in South Africa who've made they're at a Montessori school and they made up a game that's also been filmed and had a mini documentary made about it. So that's all on our website. And, you know, so kids at school can play out these different roles. And really the story is at the heart of it. It's about listening. Yes, it's about connecting with animals, but it's about the respect that's shown between or can be shown if we really slow down and listen to the concerns of another being, whether that being is a human or whether it's an animal, shouldn't matter because we have an equal place on the planet.
Well said. True. So, you know, just a question for you because you're here in the U.S. I mean, what was it like? You grew up in South Africa?
I did, yes. Yeah, I grew up. I'm an apartheid child.
You know, what was I know that's probably a whole other conversation, but I mean, what was it like growing up here and coming here, growing up there and then coming here, and, you know, any pearls of wisdom that you got from that? Or I've never been to South Africa, and I know next week we're having Francois Melby Anthony from Tula Tula to talk about her elephants.
Oh, nice.
So she'll be sharing about that. And I wrote a song about that, about Lawrence Anthony. So it's kind of funny, the synchronicity that I'm having two people that are originally from South Africa, one there, one here now. I thought that was kind of funny how that all, I didn't plan it that way. It's just the way it happened.
It's Africa Month, and I think that we should definitely get her a copy of The Elephant Who Tried to Tiptoe. We'll have to find a way to get that to her, because it'll be right up her street. And from my experience of it, it was a strange time, but you don't know that things are strange when you're young, because it's your only experience you've ever had. But things were very isolated there. We were isolated from the rest of the world. As a white South African, I was isolated through law and geography from 90% of the community in South Africa. It was something that I needed to unwind again when I went back and lived at university, and after Nelson Mandela was freed and the whole political change happened in the country. And I got such great pleasure out of my work with Habitat for Humanity, because I learned that there were neighborhoods that didn't have walls, and where security wasn't everything, and where there was a thriving buzz, and as opposed to sort of a quiet suburban neighborhood that I'd grown up in. And there's many pieces I can talk about that, but the book that's going to come out later this year, called Circle People, The Circle People, speaks a little bit to this feeling that I have around us, having lost the village, and the gratitude I have for having grown up in South Africa, where the village is still very alive, and alive in a way that that permeates culture through the Ubuntu principles, and I am because we are, and it's a very heartwarming experience for people who travel there, that they experience a great deal of friendship. It's a little bit like going to the South and feeling like, wow, everybody's homely here. And I got invited to barbecue in somebody's back garden. It's like, I wasn't expecting that. So.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, we could talk for a whole other hour about that. I was really touched by, I guess, a play back in the, I'm going to say 90s or late 90s, Dr. Cecil Hirschler grew up in South Africa, and he did a one-man play about growing up and playing with, I guess he's older than you, but playing with kids, and then all of a sudden not being able to play with his friends, and just like it made no sense to him. And I don't remember the whole play. I just remember leaving feeling very emotional about what he had shared. It was his sort of heart journey of feeling this great connection there with these people. We're all one, and then all of a sudden we're not. And he's like, I didn't know the difference, and then he did. And so I think that we're trying to capture that. You know, the getting back to the village and communities and bring that back. My best friend always says it takes a village. And I think that's what is missing. That's the emptiness in a lot of people, is that they don't have that sense of connection, or we're in our little boxes or apartments. And it's important to cultivate that in this society, and however it's meaningful for us, I think.
Yes. That's very well said. What does the fireplace look like in our modern day society? You know, we would have sat around the fire, we would have told stories, when I get the rare opportunity to go and sit by a big roaring fire out in the wild, it rekindles something. But what can we do to create that metaphoric fireplace and the same togetherness and that in our homes today?
Yeah, so important.
I have a piece of the puzzle for that, but there's many, many people who are working on it.
Yeah, well, I think the books are fabulous. I want to make sure that I say again, on facebook.com, it's Conscious Bedtime Stories, correct?
That's correct.
That's your,
but the URL, if we're going straight to it, is consciousstories.com.
Consciousstories.com. And you can contact Tandra. Yeah, I'd love to put you in touch with my lady from South Africa. If we can do that, that would be great.
Well.
Yeah. And I'm just so glad that you came to be on the show. I think these books are important. The one thing I want to say about this, it doesn't really matter what religion you are or what belief you have. They're universal from what I can see of these books. It's more about the connection, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And connection to self, you know, that internal, external connection to self. These are fundamental human principles that, you know, we have hugs, we have sticky thoughts that get in the way, we can connect with animals, you know, we can find silence within ourselves, we are intimately connected to nature and sacred space. We do often search for love, but it can be right there. Yeah, very much universal. All are welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope you'll come to my winter Christmas event and sell your books. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure. Thanks, Cynthia. Have a great evening.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.